Welcome to the Phil Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 2:23 p.m. That is Central Time. Today is November 26th, and it's certainly been an eventful 24 hours. So I thought this is probably going to be the chart of the week because it demonstrates a couple of different things. The first is that the Delta variant took over from the Beta variant in South Africa reasonably quickly, and it had an ascent and completely dominated the number of cases in a relatively similar manner to the Delta, to the Beta variant. And now the new Omicron variant, which was named just a couple of hours ago, has greatly accelerated the pace with which it is dominating the number of new cases. So this is a novel virus which is transmissible at a much greater rate than the Delta variant, which in itself was already an extraordinarily transmissible variant as well. Therefore, the easy conclusion is that we're going to see that the Omicron variant is going to become quickly the globally dominant variant within at least a month, if not, and perhaps just 2 months, because the speed with which it's spreading and its transmissibility is so much faster than the Delta variant that it's inevitable that it's going to become the globally dominant variant. So then it opens up additional questions. The first, of course, is how infectious is it? So is it going to make people significantly sicker? And it's a COVID variant, so the people are going to get reasonably sick one way or the other. And then the question is whether the people who have been inoculated already are going to have equal measures of resistance against this variant compared to the others. And some of the fear that we've seen arising over the course of the last 24 hours is that there was a fully vaccinated individual who then contracted the Omicron variant and got rather sick. So obviously then the question is going to be about waning efficacy for vaccines. And when I've already seen, for example, that in California they have defined the definition of what it is to be fully vaccinated, and now you need to have 3 jabs. Pfizer said today, and so did Moderna for that matter, that they will need about 100 days to develop a new booster shot for the Omicron variant. So that would suggest that they're taking it seriously, the WHO is taking it seriously. But what it also helps to highlight is that with the new kind of CRISPR technology that we have today, that it's possible to create new products at an exceptionally quick rate. So this is not the same as what we had in early 2020, because in early 2020, what we had was a completely unknown set of variables. And it's not like that's true today. So we have certainly got a lot of uncertainty, but it's not a whole load of new unknown variables, because we know that solutions can be brought to bear. We know how long it's going to take, but it's going to take months, not days. And in the meantime, the one thing that everyone has been worried about is inflation. Now, the thing that I've been thinking about is that central banks, they've basically said that what they want to do is see inflation trend. So we've had a pop in inflation, and that's a breakout, but it's usually not enough to demonstrate a trend. In order to have a trend, what you mostly need is a higher reaction low. So basically what central banks are waiting for is for the inflationary spiral to ebb, and then to observe where do prices settle. And we may be in the throes of seeing that right now, because oil prices today were down nearly $10, and that's an awfully big downward dynamic, and the price is right in the region of the 200-day moving average. So the big question then is, are we going to see a pop on the upside on Monday? Will we get a rebound from the region of the trend mean, or will the support in this region fail? We've certainly seen a failed upside break through the $80 level, and the dynamic of the failure is greater than the dynamic of the breakout. So that also would suggest that this area will not hold. So what we would definitely need to see next week is steadier action and clear evidence that demand is coming back to the fore. We've also had, of course, this discussion about releasing some oil from strategic reserves. One of the reasons why the price was steadier earlier this week was because less was released than had been anticipated. But now the question is going to go to the other side, and it's going to be, will OPEC significantly cut back on their supply in order to try and support markets? And that's certainly not beyond the bounds of possibility. Now, we've had significant pops on the upside over the course of the last few months from shares like Devon Energy, and the share was well off its lows in here today, and it's right in the region of the peaks from back in 2018. So now the question is it going to continue to hold here, or is it going to unwind its overbought condition relative to the trend mean? And what's interesting is that the company has been paying special dividends. So it's got an indicated yield of nearly 8%, whereas the 12-month yield is only about 3%. So this is obviously a company making money from shale. And then the big question is, will it continue to do so? Will prices for oil continue to find support at successively higher levels, or are we going to roll over? So it really is a do-or-die moment for the oil price on Monday. Now, when we think about the natural gas price, well, it's been hovering here between $5 and $6 for most of the last month, and it looks like a reasonably consistent, or I guess an orderly consolidation. But what I think is particularly relevant is that despite the fact that oil prices were low today, we're looking at an upside key reversal on natural gas. So that would suggest that there's some differentiation within the energy sector, and that potentially we're going to see additional demand dominance come to the fore for natural gas. Now, UK natural gas and European natural gas pulled back in here today, but not in as dynamic a manner or anything close to it as we saw with oil prices. So basically what we're really seeing here is the differentiation between demand for transportation fuel and then the rest of the economy, because investors are willing to bet that the stay-at-home trend is going to have going to last for longer. And as we think about the long term, and we think about the coronavirus, well, the common cold is a coronavirus, and it's been around for as long as people have. And the annual flu vaccine is something that people have had a decision or a choice about whether they want to take it or not. But it's certainly advised by the medical establishment to take it every year. Now we're looking at the coronavirus, and it looks more likely than not that there will be a jab at least annually, and potentially semi-annually, because the number of variants will continue to proliferate. This is a truly global pandemic, and it means that there are going to be variants that pop up with regularity all over the world. And of course, the other point is that we're looking for them, and that this isn't quite like any other virus that's ever really come to the fore, because we now have tools that we can monitor, and we can find the virus as it starts to pop up around the world. And of course, we have a much more interconnected world today than we've ever had before, so that's also contributing to the knowledge base about the spread of this particular virus. Now, when we think about the S&P 500, a Russian subscriber sent me the Bloomberg news story today covering the first 20 years of the BRIC acronym. And it's particularly relevant because the Brazilian, Russian, Indian, and Chinese markets did really very well, and their economies ballooned in size in the first decade of this century. And then their markets and their economies have struggled in the second. And Wall Street has done spectacularly well over the course of the last decade. And we saw a large number of shares breaking out of base formations in 2011 and 12, and we've had a really spectacular advance. Now, of course, we had the big setback in 2020 and then a very abrupt rebound, and since then we have a sequence of ranges, one above another. So we have a sequence of ranges, one above another, on the S&P 500. And if we were to look at this with a 100-day moving average, then the price finds support in the region of the 100-day moving average on successive occasions. And there's the potential that it's at least going to test the 4,500 level, which is coincident with the upper side of the underlying range, and we have plenty of evidence that support does tend to get found at the upper side of the underlying range. So the 4,500 mark would also test the region of the 100-day moving average and the region of the upper side of the underlying range. So it's a key level that we'll need to hold if this trend is going to remain consistent. But this is without any equivocation a downside weekly key reversal, and the key to the key is size, and it is reasonably large. And when we look at it on a decade long chart, it does stick out, you can see it. So downside follow through next week would certainly lend some credence to the view that we have a peak of more than very short term significance. But then the question, of course, is going to be about liquidity. Because if we're going to continue to have quantitative tightening, or I guess we're not at quantitative tightening yet, but tapering of quantitative easing, and central banks continue to talk about raising interest rates in the face of an additional viral threat, well, the chances are that they're going to demur from talking about tapering any longer. So that at least is helping to support some of the really big shares, because these were the companies where people really invested and did very well during the pandemic. So Nvidia today was down about $11, but not in a really sufficiently dynamic manner to scare anyone. And when we think about Microsoft, there's no question that the share has done spectacularly well over the course of the last year, and it definitely accelerated somewhat, but it's not down in an especially dynamic manner. There's absolutely no question that it is also sitting on a downside weekly key reversal. So then downside follow-through next week would greatly enhance the scope for a reversion back down to the mean, and potentially that we're looking at a much lengthier period of ranging and consolidation. And of course, we've had a spectacular advance. So now the question, of course, will be, where are people going to start to commit resources? The Pfizer stock has popped on the upside again on the back of this news, so it continues to be one of the big winners from the development of vaccines. Moderna, having pulled back really very sharply over the last couple of months, was up today, and in a dynamic manner up about 15%. So at least finding support in the region of the trend mean. And of course, the big then as we think about what the outlook is likely to be, we know that these companies will have vaccines within 3 months. So that greatly reduces the scope for a really big problem. But then we have the unanswered questions about how infectious and deadly this particular variant is. And that's one of the reasons why we've had these big pullbacks. And of course, we've got a large number of stocks that have been priced for perfection. So we're starting to see these downside weekly key reversals coming through, and certainly helps if you type the ticker correctly. So Apple doesn't have the weekly key, but it does have a history of failing to sustain upward breaks, and it looks like it this one is failing as well. So this is another instance of a share that is susceptible to at least some pause and consolidation. Google's share has also been rolling over for the last week, and it's also got the downward dynamic and the failed upside break in here right now. So that's at least holding out the prospect that we're going to come back down and test the region of the trend mean. Now, of course, we've also had a really quite substantial pullback in bond yields. And this is, I think, the other big point, that it's always been touch and go about whether central banks would be able to go ahead and raise rates and remove monetary accommodation. And even the merest threat of a new variant has resulted in a substantial contraction, a 16 basis point pullback in the 10-year yield. And now it's right back at the lower side of the range and testing the region of the 200-day moving average. So there's also the potential that inflationary pressures are going to moderate because oil prices have come back. And we're likely to see more emphasis on at home, stay at home shares. So Zoom Media did well today. And then less people interested in cruises, for example, or in hotels. And those were among the leading decliners in here. The airline sector has also taken a hit because people will be less inclined to travel. I certainly know that when we think about what is likely, well, I know that my family were talking about going away for Christmas, and then we started looking at what the mask requirements and the vaccine requirements were for various locations in the Caribbean or Hawaii, and it just seemed like an awful headache that one would have to be tested twice when one goes to Hawaii, and then there's full-on mask mandates that are enforced rigorously in most of the Caribbean. So we just decided we're not going. We're going to stay at home. My children's school, they said that they were going to remove their mask mandate in the middle of January. Well, that's now looking rather unlikely. So these are the kinds of decisions that families are making. They're making quite their, and of course, businesses and people that want to travel. Historically, we've traveled a lot, and we're looking forward to traveling a lot again. But at the same time, we're reluctant to make the kind of personal sacrifices necessary to comply with the myriad of different restrictions on just personal space. And then obviously, there are going to be additional restrictions imposed because of fear about what this new virus brings. But if bond yields continue lower, then that's pricing in the potential for considerably less inflation, potentially even deflation. And gold prices today were really quite volatile, but closed out the day, or as we approach the close, in positive territory. Now the big question is, are we going to see upside follow through next week? We've had a big pullback. And this isn't the first time we've had big pullbacks from the region of a lower high. And in order to really confirm that we're back in a demand-dominated environment and to demonstrate to investors that gold is capable of holding a rally and not scaring the daylights out of everyone, so then it will absolutely have to sustain a move now above the 1875 level in order to really get people back on side. And it's at that point I think people will start rushing to buy gold. But it is now back again in the region of $1,800, and this has been an area of resistance for most of the last 6 months, and it is now potentially looking like support. And we still have this sequence of higher reaction lows, and potentially what we're seeing today is another higher reaction low. Obviously, it would look a lot better if the price had held on to the initial advance today. The one thing that we can think about gold, and if we really have a good example from 2020, it's that gold pulled back really sharply in the initial panicky period and then rallied impressively. So it went up almost 50% in the space of a very brief period of time. So then the question right now is, are we going to have more volatility? Because there's the possibility that we'll have some contagion selling, and maybe that's what we had some of that in here today. Definitely Japan pulled back very sharply last night as people started to really wake up to what the risk is from this new variant, where in Hong Kong, where they found two instances of this variant, then the Hang Seng also pulled back sharply, so coming right back down to the lower side of the range. Of course, Hong Kong has got additional challenges, and the Chinese market, they've asked DiDi to delist from the USA. The share pulled back rather dynamically in here today, but it was off its lows. I really do wonder when we're going to have the class action lawsuits against the management of DiDi, and particularly the private equity or venture capitalists that had the initial positions, because this really was a criminal affair where they really engaged in really destination or listing arbitrage to get around the certain risk of opprobrium from the Communist Party in China. Well, when I go back and think about the evolution of the really big bull market in commodities and emerging markets in the 2000s, we had a number of seismic events. The first was that China entered the WTO, and that was a really significant event. So it introduced a major source of new labor and infrastructure development into the global economy. And then after 9/11, the dollar started to trend lower, and it trended lower in a really dynamic manner, all the way from the peaks in 2002 to the lows in 2008. And in as much as the dollar trended lower, emerging market currencies trended higher, and it acted as a really significant tailwind for investing in emerging markets and also for investing in commodities. So we had this huge source of new demand for everything coming out of China. There had been chronic underinvestment in the sector for really for generations. So there was a supply and elasticity argument, and it took a decade to build the new infrastructure, to find the new oil, and ultimately a lot of that new supply came to market around the same time as the credit crisis. The massive swell of monetary and fiscal accommodation during 2008, then it started to support the dollar initially, but then the dollar pulled back for the next 3 years, and then the dollar bottomed in 2011 because the Tea Party movement was starting to gain traction, and the USA started in on a fiscal consolidation. So then the dollar started to trend higher again, and then it's also worth considering that by the time we got around to 2012, where there was this massive foreclosure crisis, that also represented the deleveraging process for consumers, and the banks had been forced into deleveraging. So the US economy was in a good place to grow again, and then the evolution of solutions and products around the rollout of 4G delivered the outsized benefits that accrued to the really big technology companies. So the relative performance of the Fangman stocks broke out to new highs last week, and it's starting to come back down a bit in here this week. But this has been by far the best performing sector over the course of the last decade. And these companies went from a low in 2013 of about 6% of the total market to 22% today. So we're only talking about 8 shares: Facebook, Apple, Netflix, Google, Microsoft, Amazon, Nvidia, and Tesla. And these are the most significant companies. And it's really hard to argue that you're going to have a bear market without them rolling over in a big way. Now, each has their own unique attractions, but also individual challenges. But I think one of the most significant factors is that when you group together companies like Microsoft, Google, and Amazon, and you look at their cloud businesses, and one of the reasons why we've had a plethora of new businesses being able to start up is because we've had lots of additional liquidity because of low interest rates, and then they haven't had to go off and build their own infrastructure. They simply rent rack space at some of the big data providers. So all of Amazon's profits come from the data centers. Microsoft and Google are also major providers of network space for cloud computing. And they all collect fat fees from these startups. So the startups get initial traction, and they have basically limitless server space that they can rent. So therefore, they can focus their attention on gaining market share and building out their business, and they don't have to worry about infrastructure. And of course, that works wonderfully. So it really lowers the barrier to entry to a lot of different types of online businesses. It means that there's lots of them. But what it also means is that these companies are all often competing for the same prize, and that they pay out a substantial quantity of their turnover to companies like Microsoft, Google, and Amazon. So if then the risk is for these types of companies that it's the small companies roll over. Well, that is a particular risk when interest rates rise and access to liquidity falters. But for a lot of the online companies, well, lower interest rates are really good news. So we don't have to worry so much about these sorts of factors. And I think it's also relevant that high yield spreads are still in the region of their all-time lows. Now, we certainly saw a pop on the upside over the course of the last day or two. And when this is next updated, it's quite likely that this spread is going to continue to march higher. and the high yield ETFs were also in negative territory today. So there's a very clear rolling over characteristic to this chart. So we're at a critical juncture where the outlook for the technology sector is, I think, likely to start to attract interest once more, but we haven't seen evidence of it. The banking sector is starting to pull back as well. Banks did well when interest rates were going up, so they start to do less well when interest rates are coming back down. When we then think about where are we in this cycle, well, we're certainly in an environment where there are questions about the need to reload interest rate weapons from central banks' perspective. The governments of the world are thinking about how they can get around the massive additional spending that they permissioned last year, and how do they withdraw it without losing power? So, of course, the answer is slowly. If we see greater problems arise from this particular variant, then we move into a deeper, lengthier process of consolidation. On the other hand, if we see a swift move by central banks and governments to ease the pain and to clearly demonstrate that they're going to continue to monitor the situation, remain flexible, and they're not going to taper, or they might even ramp back up some of their accommodative measures, then a lot of these assets that pulled back sharply today are going to rebound. Now, when we think about the long term, we know that there are challenges that are outstanding with regard to debt, and there is an extraordinary quantity of debt outstanding. And that really weighs on the ability of governments to spend money when there's the prospect of higher interest rates. But it also weighs on central banks because they know that governments are not in a position to stop spending. We've been through a decade of fiscal austerity in Europe, and the USA has been toying with fiscal austerity and balanced budgets. And people are sick of it. And we've had this rise of political populism, which is a direct response to the political and corporate response to the credit crisis and then the sovereign wealth crisis. So there's just no prospect that the ECB, for example, is going to hurry to raise rates. And the euro was in stronger territory today because we're getting some unwinding of the short-term oversold condition. So this was something of an all-change day. What it also means is that as people sold stocks, they were then accumulating cash. And we saw a significant pullback on the euro stocks in here today. And it suggests that we have a peak of near-term significance, but it is coming back into the region of the trend mean. And that, of course, is in dollar terms. In euro terms, it is still holding the sequence of higher reaction lows. So, if the euro continues to rebound, then that's going to act as a headwind to the continued advance that we've seen in European stocks. When we think about the dollar index, the reason that the dollar has been firm was because investors were willing to give the benefit of the doubt to the Federal Reserve that they would be the big central bank that actually achieves liftoff. And at the very minimum, the Omicron variant is delaying that. So it suggests that now we're going to see the dollar start to unwind the short-term overbought condition. and it could quite easily come back into the region of the 200-day moving average. But I think it's only a matter of time before investors start to come around to the conclusion that central banks can't raise rates. We have a phenomenal amount of debt outstanding, and a significant advance in interest rates has a really deleterious effect on the ability of governments to fund themselves. And we've been through a period of significant social unrest and distress, where, and then we also have this psychological phenomenon where people want to live their best lives. And everybody's had a brush with fatality. So everyone now wants to, and they're in a hurry to live their best lives. So demand for everything has increased substantially, and people are getting impatient at lockdowns. So if we go into more lockdowns because of this variant, then observance is going to be less, and people are going to get agitated, and we're going to have even more demand for goods and services. So ultimately, that means more debt, more money, and people aren't going to be willing to vote for people that are advocating for balanced budgets or that for austerity. We're just not there yet because inflationary pressures might have surged, but they've done so in an uneven manner, and a lot of it has been to do with semiconductors. And semiconductors are certainly increasing in supply. The South Korean stock market is pulling back in a dynamic manner, and the Philadelphia Semiconductors Index had a downside key reversal in here this week. So that's certainly suggesting at least a pause in what has been a really phenomenal advance over the course of the last month. We're in an environment where the risk has increased, and we've gone a long time without having a reasonably sized pullback. Now, the VIX index, which is representative of demand for put options, has popped on the upside in here this week, and it's closed at a new high for the last 6 months. So, if we're going to move into a more risk-off environment, then the VIX will break and sustain the move above the 30 level. And that would then point towards a more volatile, deeper pullback, lengthier consolidation that would take more time to unwind. But I remain very much of the view that if bond yields are coming down and high yield spreads are reasonably well contained, so that would imply that stock markets start to find support reasonably soon, and if that happens, high yield spreads will also fail to sustain this breakout. If that occurs, then the chances are that we move into a another big rotation, that the stay-at-home stocks do better, the reopening stocks do worse, and that we go into a lengthier period of convalescence for the stay-at-home sector. When we then, we think about stocks like Royal Caribbean, where we had the huge decline in 2020 and then a rebound, and now it's rolling over again. Or we look at some of the casinos like Las Vegas Sands, then there's obviously the potential here that it just rolls over or continues to underperform. As we look at the long term, there is obviously the question of debt, and it's a question everywhere. And it really is only not so much about whether a country has a debt problem, but more about who owns the debt and who owes the debt. Because in the USA, the debt is mostly about the government, and governments have the ability to tax. So ultimately, taxes will have to rise if the debt issues become intractable. And in the USA, the consumer is comparatively less levered. Whereas then we can think about China, where China's government has got questions because they don't know how much debt they've got. You have the central government, which knows how much debt it has, and then you have the regional governments who don't know how much debt they have. And there is an exhaustive process underway at present to try and figure out what the actual number is. But it's going to stretch into trillions. And China is looking inward. And now they are only going to double down even further on their restrictions on travel and internal movement. They're going to be absolutely terrified of a virus with an even quicker transmission rate than the Delta variant. So it's really quite likely that China's stock market is going to have more trouble than most. Of course, then the question is, are they going to supply the kind of liquidity necessary to keep it afloat? And of course, you have the other questions about the ability of corporate boards to remain independent, and this, I think, growing realization that it's a system set up which is heads I win and tails you lose from the perspective of an entrepreneur. And then you also have the there's been a phenomenon over the last few days that which has led to pork egg fried rice being banned from social media. And this is just another example of the overreaction of censors and the real phenomenon that there is a protest movement, and that so far the vast majority of young people making these kinds of jokes, they've been able to do so because they're witty and they're not trying to take power. But the reason why China has banned egg fried rice with cured pork is because on the 25th of November, during the Korean War, Mao's son died, and the story was that he was a war hero, and now the new story is that he was so eager to get egg fried rice that he ignored warnings to get into the bunker, and they had just finished cooking it when the bombs dropped. So it was his hubris that got him killed. And people started posting those pictures of fried rice on Thursday and saying that that was China's Independence Day, or it was really China's Thanksgiving Day, to be more accurate, because they were giving thanks for the fact that China didn't turn into North Korea and that Mao's son didn't succeed him in power. Well, that's just a brief window on what exactly is going on in China. And the stock market has been completely unremarkable. I think it's, and I guess looking at the performance of emerging markets, we've been through a very lengthy period of time where the main BRIC markets haven't done well. Now, the Russian index did do well from the lows in 2020, and it's pulling back now because of the volatility in the oil price. But the Russian market was among the best performers in the world from 1998 until 2008. It went from 61 to 2500. So that's a really spectacular advance. And since then, it really hasn't gone anywhere. And this, of course, is a US dollar denominated index. So we can do the same thing and look at the Brazilian market, because it took off like a rocket in the early 2000s. It was coming from exceptionally depressed levels, and it multiplied in value, going from 2,000 to over 40,000. So that was a really phenomenal advance, and since then the price really hasn't gone anywhere. And then we can think about, if we just look at MSCI China, which would have been the primary way that people looked at it as a big market in the early 2000s. And what we have is a market that has done reasonably well over the course of the last few years, but did spectacularly well from the period up from 2003 until about 2007. So it did break out to new highs, and now we're seeing this very volatile range. The number one success story has been India, and India has continued to march higher over the course of the last decade. Now, there is nobody should be under any illusion that India isn't a volatile market. And it did spectacularly well from about 2001 until 2007. And then it ranged for 7 years and broke out. And then it really did spectacularly well in 2020 and up to this week. Well, we did have a big pullback in India today, and it suggests that there is a peak of at least near-term significance, and this index has not been updated through today's close. So the Nifty index was down 500 points in here today, and it's suggesting that we have a reversion back down towards the mean. If it pauses at the region of the trend mean, then it's still a reasonably consistent trend. The size of the move on the drawdown that we had at the beginning of this year is about the same as a reversion to the mean now. But this is a massive reaction against the prevailing trend. And we also had the failed upside breaks within this little range. So it is really important that the index finds support in the region of the trend mean, or we're looking at a peak of medium term significance, and it could potentially then translate into a lengthier period of consolidation overall. And I think that's one of the defining characteristics right now. I think India is an incredibly exciting market, and it's in the point of development today that's not all that different from where China was in terms of infrastructure 20 years ago. And India absolutely needs that infrastructure, and they're going to build it. And they're going to need a lot more cement and steel and copper. And copper prices have got the clearest secular bull market argument to support them. But it also needs a healthy global economy. So there is certainly the potential that we could have weakness in the industrial resources, a rebound in the precious metals, some additional weakness in the energy commodities, and then the big question for emerging markets is always going to be about the dollar. And if the dollar starts to trend downwards, then I've been calling it the linchpin for the argument to invest in emerging markets. So we're, I think, at a really important juncture in terms of the big play, because it was all emerging markets and industrial resources from about 2000 all the way up to 2011 with a big interlocution because of the credit crisis. And since 2011, it has been all Wall Street, because you've had the evolution of technology and a reasonably strong dollar, which has encouraged investors to seek out the security and the returns available on Wall Street. If we're going to see a migration back to a hybrid of commodity development and infrastructure, or commodity demand and rising middle classes, but particularly in places like India, well, then we're going to have to start to see the utter dominance of the Fang Man shares rolling over, and subsequently the dollar starting to trend lower, and that will ignite intense institutional demand for anything that's not dollar denominated. Markets like Brazil and Russia, where they're raising interest rates at a really rapid clip right now, and they are dealing with a significant inflationary problem. Well, that becomes a lot less of a problem if the dollar starts trending lower. But the quantity of money that's owed by countries like Turkey and Argentina, and their exposure to a strong dollar, that's leading to trouble for those particular nations. I think eventually we're going to get to a point where investors realize that interest rates can't go up, and the path to normalization of interest rates is going to take an exceptionally lengthy amount of time. And ultimately, the dollar will have to be weaker. But of course, nobody wants a strong currency, and China and the USA have among the strongest currencies in the world at present. And the dollar was a little weaker in here today. The renminbi was still reasonably steady. So right now, China is willing to take the heat and is willing to spend what is necessary to maintain a stable currency. They're also attempting to control their own domestic inflation by keeping inflation or by keeping the currency strong. So there's certainly the potential that China will continue to attract flows, not so much because people are suddenly comfortable with the risk and with the censorship and with the interference in the corporate sector, but that people will start to migrate towards China because of the reasonable steadiness of the currency and the potential that they'll capture a yield as well. And of course, that's a significant source of demand for emerging markets overall. And the MSCI Emerging Markets ETF pulled back very sharply today, so it's now back testing the region of the peaks from 2018, and that's the upper side of what feels like an awfully lengthy range. It's looking like the potential for a failed downside break. So now the big question is, if China's markets roll over, they will have a knock-on effect for the wider for the wider emerging market sector. That's going to contain or entail potentially contagion risk, and we're certainly seeing contagion risk coming through as well from Bitcoin. Bitcoin was down $4,500 in here today, pulling back again from the $60,000 level. So it's increasingly looking like a failed upside break, and at least going to come back down and test the 50,000 level, potentially come back down and test the 30,000 level. Right now, Ethereum is testing the 4,000 level, and I think it's a particularly important differential here that Bitcoin is encountering resistance in an area of previous support, and Ethereum is finding support in the region of a previous area of resistance. So that 4,000 area absolutely needs to hold if Ethereum is going to be able to continue to demonstrate its outperformance relative to Bitcoin, and hopefully, or I guess potentially, plot its own path towards the proof of stake phenomenon that they've been trying to develop. So we're at an interesting juncture. If the trends that we've had over the course of the last 18 months could easily rebound next week, that would be on the back of central bank action to flood the market with additional liquidity. It's also possible that the more transmissible virus might not necessarily be more deadly. And if that's the case, well then, we'll start to see a reversion and I think a rebound starting to occur. But right now, there's certainly more air of a risk-off environment, and that suggests that we need to be monitoring the consistency of trends. And also, I think it is for the bulls to prove right now. And I think with that, I'll leave you for the weekend, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.